Your brain is a pattern finding machine. So if you are asking it, oh gosh, but what's going to go wrong today? It will give you all the evidence to show you that, yeah, look, life isn't great.
I've just had an enlightening conversation with Maya Rachora, who is an international speaker and author of Visualize. And she has recently made history as Nike's first ever mental fitness trainer. That's right, a mental fitness trainer. She wants our mental fitness to be as normal and essential to us as physical fitness. It makes sense, doesn't it? Actually, don't you think some of the most wonderful people that I speak to, the ideas just make sense? It was one of those conversations where it made me even more curious about this practice. I love the idea of rewiring your mind, whatever age. She's done this with 80-year-olds and an 8-year-old, refusing to let our limitations define us. And I promise you, this conversation with Maya is not one you're going to want to miss. You're going to need to have your notepad. You're going to need to find a quiet moment in the day. You're going to need to like lemons. More on that later. And actually, you're going to need to believe that you have the power all along to make all of the difference. Enjoy.
Bow your head and let your eyelids close on down. Where we're going, you won't need to bring your frown.
Hi, I'm Holly Tucker, and welcome to my podcast, Conversations of Inspiration. I've reached out to founders and those who simply inspire me to share their hard-earned wisdom with you. My hope is that collectively, these remarkable realizations will help you on your own journey. I like to think of it as inspiration for life. So let's begin this week's Conversation of Inspiration. Maya, welcome to Conversations of Inspiration. Lovely to have you here.
Hi, I'm very excited. Looking forward to it.
This is going to be one of these conversations. Now and again, I get the honour of speaking to someone like yourself, where I feel that we're about to go on a bit of a learning journey. And I wanted to introduce you to everyone. You're the author of the brilliant book, Visualize, which I have in my hand right now. It's the reason we're talking, because I started on chapter one and I was like, right, okay, we have got to talk to this incredible woman. You're an international speaker. You're a visualization expert and have recently made history as the first ever mental fitness trainer for Nike. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very exciting. I mean, took time, but we got there, which is cool.
We're going to go through that story. And can I just start though? Because I want to sort of jump in before we get into the younger you, which you're not actually that old as we speak, but we're going to get into the really younger you. But I just wanted, before we get into that, to learn more about your definition of what you mean when we say mental fitness, because we're all familiar now, fantastically, with the term mental health, of course. But tell me what mental fitness really means. If you had to describe it to someone, no, someone's listening right now, they've never heard that term, how would you describe it?
Yeah, I think this is a great place to start, because even now, if I ask people, you know, what's mental fitness, they don't know. So really, mental fitness is the active maintenance of good mental health. And I think the best way to frame it is think about what physical fitness is. So if you have a body, you have a physical health, right? It can be good, it can be bad, you can be injured, you can be overweight, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's the same with your mental health. We all have a state of mind. But you're only physically fit if you're going to the gym, maybe you are doing yoga, dance, running, walking. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to mental fitness, no one really knows how to train the brain. Mm. And I found that as I was entering the space of mindset and development and mental health, there was so much conversation about mental health, but very little action in your everyday that you could do. And I don't think this is our fault, because, you know, if you think about at school, everyone has PE class or physical education. Yeah. I mean, whether you're going to it or not is a different question, but it was on your curriculum. But none of us ever had that opportunity to train our minds or our brains in the same way. And we suffer for that now. And I think the only other thing I'd add here is that often when we talk about mental health, I think people assume something is wrong. You know, like, oh, like you're broken or you've gone through something. But I think mental fitness is so sexy. It's so empowering. It's so forward thinking because the best of the best athletes and entrepreneurs do it. They train their brain. So, well, why can't we? So you don't have to be sad or unhappy to be training your brain. You should actually be great and still want to invest in it. So for me, it's action orientated. It's really exciting to think, how can I get stronger? How can I get sharper? And it goes beyond just speaking about it.
You just mentioned at school, you've got physical exercise, you've got PE, but you don't learn to train your brain. But someone would might say, but hang on a minute, you've got class every day. You've got math, English. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Actually, hang on a minute. That was, aren't you training your brain there?
You absolutely are. And I regard this as cardio. That's like the cardio training of the brain where, you know, you're using it. You are figuring out problems. You are learning things. And of course, that is great for the brain. But okay, come to now, let's say you're 20 years old and you are feeling insecure because you're always on social media and you're comparing yourself to other people. Now, where is our physics or chemistry degree or that English class we did? How does that help us here now? And I think it's really that skill set of how do I manage my thoughts, my emotions, and my actions? And that really is the intersection of what mental fitness is. It's the way you think, the way you feel, and the way you perform. And if we can get control over that, then you can live a very rich life.
Great answer. I mean, it's fascinating because this really makes sense. And I think some of the best things, aren't they, are the ones that where people go, yeah, that's really obvious. And you're like, yeah, no, I know it's obvious, but no one does it. And you're like, that just cannot be the case. I want to go back, as we said, to a younger you. You're very young now. Am I right in saying you're 27?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're 27. Your journey with visualization, though, started over a decade ago when you were just 15 and you were diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, an inflammatory bowel disease. And before that, I read that you were what people might call a high achiever as a child. And you excelled at school, you played professional badminton, you danced competitively, and everyone thought, wow, this is the sort of daughter I want. You're confident, you're bubbly. It sounds like a very happy childhood. Were you always encouraged to do all of the things that you enjoyed when you were little?
Yeah, I come from an incredible family where, you know, I also have two sisters who are older than me, and I was amongst a lot of like sporty people, creative people, and I was never put under pressure to do anything. But naturally, I think it was that internal pressure that I have to get the A stars and I want to be the best. And, you know, I was in the netball team, the rounders team, the tennis team, the running team, the badminton team. Like, you couldn't stop me. And I loved it. But inside, I guess I was just this very insecure little girl that was like trying to fit in and was trying to feel good through her achievements. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's uncommon. I see a lot of people, even now, where we put all our worth into our achievements. And, you know, now since really reflecting on it, because I was born into a three, so there's three sisters, I guess it makes a lot of sense where being the youngest, I always had to fight for my attention. I had to cry louder. I had to do funny things to get the attention. And so as I grew up in my head, I was like, wait a sec, if I achieve better than any of them, I'm going to get praise and I'm going to be the one. And so it was a pattern I just kept, you know, going for. And so, yes, I was very high achieving. And people used to say to me like, wow, Maya, you've got so much potential. Like, you know, you're going to go really far. And you kind of want to do it for them. You're like, oh, okay, well, I clearly need to do something with my life here.
Yeah.
And of course, I had the goal of taking badminton really far. So playing nationally and then, you know, could I get into the squad for international as well? And then I guess life hit me in a way that I just never could have imagined. And I was always a very healthy, I ate well, I exercised well. So it was nothing about my lifestyle. But when I was 15, I just basically got some pain in my stomach and I was, you know, maybe I saw some streaks of blood in my stool, but you just do what everyone does. You go to the doctor and, you know, they tell you it's fine, bit of inflammation, have some tablets. And day by day, my symptoms just got so much worse to the point that I was now going to the toilet like 35 times a day and you are just screaming for your life. Because you think that you are going to, like, I don't know, it's just so inhuman. I find it so hard to put into words what it was like, because most people, they think, okay, oh, it must have been like when she's on her period or when you have like food poisoning. But this was, it's like razor blades inside of you and all you're excreting is blood. And so you're losing so much weight, so much life from your face and your eyes and your heart. And it's just like, it was debilitating in so many ways, because I think things like eating or going to the toilet is stuff we all take for granted. And when that becomes really tough, you really don't feel human. And I used to go into school wearing these like adult nappies that I had to find particular clothes that would hide it. And then I'd have accidents in my classroom and no one knew because I was so ashamed of the disease. I just... You know, you're a 16, 17-year-old girl. No one talks about that. They're thinking about, oh, who's your latest boyfriend? And you're there like, oh my gosh, I'm just, I'm literally having an accident in my pants.
And tell me, what happened? So you kept on going back to the doctor. It ended up basically being diagnosed and you ended up being basically revolving door in the hospital. You were in and out of hospital all the time. You're now a young girl having to manage yourself. I'm sure that impacted your social life. As you said, going out, even going anywhere, your sporting career or what you were dreaming about. Did that all finish as well? And how did your family take this on? Because you're a young girl. You, as you said, you're not out partying and drinking and whatever. You're a young woman. How did they take this on board?
You know, it comes back down to who I was when I was young, where I am a fighter. Like, I, even in illness, I wanted to achieve the best result. I wanted to, you know, be a great patient and have it all work for me. And it meant that I found it so hard to let go of the badminton, the netball, the going into school. Like, I remember being in hospital still studying for an exam I had. And it was like, Maya, you can't even like smile or eat anything. And you're still thinking about getting A stars. What's going on here? You know, my family, it was so new for all of us, so new. And I think there was so much desperation of like, Maya, is there anything that can help? And like, Holly, I don't say this lightly, but we went like round the world to try and find the best things. You know, we went to surgeons in India who had like helped famous people. We went to like the Mayo Clinic in America. There were treatments in like France. I was on every diet possible. I remember even in the UK, they just started fecal transplants, which is so illegal. Like, it's not even accepted by the medical system. But I was there like, yeah, absolutely, let's try it. Because what do you do when no medication works, when every single day is like just awful? I didn't know day from night. And you know, the saddest and hardest part was like, people would say to me, oh, wow, Maya, you are so strong for enduring this. And I was just like, I don't want to be anymore. Like, I don't think it's a strength to have to endure something like this. I just don't think it is. I think it's a very, very awful quality of life. So my parents always did the best. And I think everyone dealt with it in the way they could. But ultimately, yeah, I made some decisions then that I guess have led me to where I am today. But it was not easy. No, it was not easy.
And I can imagine also, you know, as a parent, you're probably looking at your young daughter and you're just going, how is this even possible? Why is this happening to her? They're trying to search for the answers. You're on at least 60 tablets, medication, supplements, herbal remedies each day. As you said, going to the loo over 30 times. This is no way to live. And I I can imagine that anxiety. And this is really, as you said, in the middle of all that pain and uncertainty, you discovered something that would basically change your life. And it's the where your visualization began. And I read that you initially learned the technique in hospital. Firstly, I'm wondering, how did you feel about it to start with? Because I think when we're not well, we're often bombarded by well-intentioned and yet sometimes quite frustrating advice. You know, you should try this medication, or you should drink apple cider vinegar or have turmeric or all these sorts of things, you know. And I'm wondering what made you try visualization and did it help you initially?
So I never actually decided to try it. I think I didn't realize I was doing it at the time. So the way it happened was, this was like, I had found out that I got into university and I was going to go and study in Bristol, but I couldn't go because I was too unwell. And there was just, I was like, what, 35 kilograms at the age of 18. So it was very dangerous to be doing that. Mm-hmm. And this nurse, she was the one who did my bloods every morning. And she came in this one day and she could see I was just like, I was nothing. I was so withered. And she was like, Maya, you know, if you weren't in hospital here, like, where would you be? Like, what is the uni you want to go to? And I just got so angry at her. I hated that she asked me such a positive question when really there was nothing positive about what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I literally told her to like, get out of my room. And when she left, I basically just closed my eyes. And the thing I really wanted to do was walk again. That was it. It was nothing like crazy or massive. It was just something that would make me feel a bit more human. And I hadn't done it in a while. And so I, in my mind, imagined taking these steps in the hospital hallway, like again and again. And it was like my mind kind of enjoyed it because it was like, not what I was doing right now. And when I opened my eyes, there I was back in my reality of like, cool, I'm on this hospital bed. But for the first time in like 4.5 years, my brain said to me, actually, Maya, what if you could like walk again? What if you could leave hospital? What if you could go to university? And I hadn't asked those questions to myself before. And so I just kept going and going and seeing myself walking and now back at home with my dog. And it was like these images that felt hopeful to me. And then when I left hospital, I just got really curious about what I was doing with my brain. And that's where I started to learn about visualization, mental imagery. But then I also practiced it every day. And that curiosity became a very big passion. I was reading every book. I was watching every story of someone who had healed themselves. I was learning from athletes why they were using it. And that passion turned into obsession, like obsession. Because now I was practicing about 2 hours every day and all different types. I was drawing out my colon, visualizing it, healing, getting better. I was also seeing myself at university now, on stages even sometimes. And it's now been, 8.5 years. And I have still practiced visualization every single day without fail. And I sit here not only having overcome this illness, like I have no symptoms, I'm on no medication, and I haven't been for the last 5 years, but I truly am the most confident and healthy and hopeful and bold version of myself. And I owe that to the fact that I learned how to rewire the brain and also heal the body. Now, I'm not saying I'm like, you know, I'm very careful. I don't say, oh, you can cure anything, all of that. Mm-hmm. But what I really do believe is that having a negative mind, one of a victim mindset, one that was just believing whatever people told me about my life, really kept me very unwell. And my brain just really helped me to see the fact that, hey, you can help your body. You can build a better future. And why not give yourself the best chance to do that?
Incredible. I mean, you set yourself a goal using visualization, and for you, it was game changing. And I think what makes it so powerful, certainly listening to you, is that it's about more than just healing the body. It was about healing the relationship with your mind. And you got to do that. I mean, we're going to go on to what that has meant already for your life, but you're doing this at a young age and you've got your whole world in front of you. And it reminds me of, obviously, the very powerful Mo Gordit. And I interviewed him for this podcast, and I know you've been on his podcast as well, Me Too, Slow Mo. And he talks about this algorithm for happiness. And he said that happiness is a choice, that we can achieve it, but that it's our responsibility. And I love talking to people who talk about responsibility, talk about accountability, talking about how we don't have to rely on anyone else but ourselves to do something for ourselves. And his formula is based, as you know, but for those who need reminding, on the idea that happiness is determined by the events we experience in our life and the expectations we have on how life should be. Tell me how visualization is different, because both methods use the mind as a tool. It's an ancient technique. I know that, you know, it's incredible. And yet we seem to have lost the skill to practice it.
It's funny you say this. I was literally having a conversation with someone today about expectation and how there's something I'm really unsure about. But we can go into that in a second, because I think what this raises, and where I think visualization has a lot of misconceptions around it, is that, okay, if I visualize something, it's just going to appear into my life, right? If I visualize that I can get this job, I'm going to get promoted, I'm going to be with this person, then cool, let me just wait for it. And this is where we then start having these expectations. Well, oh, but why didn't it turn out like this? Or why hasn't it come into my life? Or why am I not better? For me, visualization is a tool that gives you the power to take ownership of your brain and how to rewire it. Now, I don't teach it in the way that I'm like, hey, start visualizing things you can't control. I'm very strict actually on saying you've got to visualize, right, your character. Maybe it's a performance you're doing. Maybe it's an action you're doing. Maybe it's your emotions. Maybe it is a goal you have. But it's not that, hey, I expect now I have to achieve this. No, life happens. Stuff can happen. Curveballs can happen. But the person you become on the way, absolutely, that is going to serve you very well. And so I think there's so much truth to this fact that if we suddenly have all these ideas and goals and we get really attached to it, yeah, we're probably going to be disappointed. So there's finding this balance of, okay, how can I have a goal that inspires me? So for example, I always say to people, yeah, look, I'm building the Nike of mental fitness. I don't care if it takes me 50 years. It excites me. Am I going to do it? Who knows? Who knows? But the strength in my vision there gives me so much power in the present, in how I show up, in how I act, in my attitude. And I mean, slightly controversial here, but I don't really believe in happiness. I don't think it's a thing that we should be seeking or trying to achieve, because I think happiness is a manner that you travel in rather than a destination that you're going to get, because you can't be happy all the time. Part of being human is you experience the fullness of feeling everything. And there's a great quote in the book, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and it says that a fool waits for its desires to be satisfied to feel happy, but a warrior is happy for no reason. And I like this idea, because so many of us, we do wait till we've got the car, the relationship, the house, whatever it is, to feel happy. But really, it's a manner you travel in, and you have to choose, hey, I'm going to decide to view this situation with this lens. But for me, I'm not a happy person 24/7. I don't want to be. Am I content? Yes. Do I feel at peace? Yes. Even when there's chaos around me? Yes. But that's trained. So I think happiness, just ask yourself as well, like, is that the goal you want? And if it is, great. But just decide what that means for you. What does it actually mean to seek that journey?
Is it the old adage, it's a journey, not a destination? Do you think that that's what we're saying here? Like, basically, this idea that happiness is this destination, but it's what you're saying here is it's not. It's a, as you said, a manner. Your mode of transport is choosing to live in a happier manner, so to speak. And do you think that we really, because like some people are like, if my husband was listening to this, which, you know, I do try and make him listen to my podcast, but, you know, after 20, 3 years of being together, I think he just feels like I have to listen to you all the time. But, and he won't even hear this, which is, means I can just say anything, but he is a half glass full gentleman.
Mm.
And so he will absolutely, and I'm not, he will say that, you know, that this manner in which you want to travel, this discipline, he couldn't attain that. That's not something that he can attain. Is this where you're like, because we're going to get into visualization and counteracting negativity and what people think about it all. You're basically saying you have to train this. This isn't just coming to you on a plate, easy peasy, do a bit of this. This is a daily practice. This is something you are literally training a muscle to work in a certain way. And if you don't, you won't be able to do this.
Okay, let's make it really like practical for people. So through evolution, our brains are negatively wired. Now, that's not our fault. It's just because if you look at how we evolved, you know, we're always looking for the danger and for those lions that are coming at us, and we have mm-hmm. to be on alert. So mm-hmm. naturally in life, our brains are always thinking, okay, well, what could go wrong? Or why am I going to get hurt? Or why am I going to be in danger? So that's why our brains have a skewed negativity there. Now, if you think about, let's say you were to Google, okay, is chocolate bad for me? Google will give you such great evidence and ideas and examples and pictures of why chocolate is really bad for you, right? It gives you everything you need. Now, if you said, hey, why is chocolate good for me? It will do the same thing. It will give you mm-hmm. all the reasons, all the evidence, all the articles why chocolate actually has great benefits. Now, your brain works exactly the same. It is a pattern finding machine. So if you are asking it, oh gosh, but what's going to go wrong today? Or, oh no, am I going to fail? It will give you all the evidence to show you that, yeah, look, life isn't great. You know, your expectations aren't met. You're not satisfied. So here's what I've done now. So this was about 4.5 years ago. And I noticed that when I woke up in the morning, you know, I did what probably everyone else does. You go on your phone, you're like, okay, here goes the same day again. You know, I look outside, I'm like, okay, I got to go do this. And then my own teacher, she's incredible. She's a meditation teacher. And she was like to me, and she helped me when I was really unwell. She was like to me, okay, how can you just control that first thought of the day? Now, every single morning for 30 days, I started waking up. And do you know what I said? I said, okay, show me how good it gets. That's it. Just show me how good it gets. Nothing too specific, nothing like that. I just said, show me how good it gets. And I started doing this again and again and again. Now, it has been 4.5 years. And now, to this day, when I wake up, my mind, first thing, show me how good it gets. Now, what does this do? Every day, you get to choose what lens am I going to view the world. If I view it with pessimism, negativity, victimization, everything's against me, then that is what you will find. But I'm choosing every morning to put on the lens, okay, show me how good this gets. Even when I have hard days or I'm in difficult situations or I'm having setbacks, my mind is still open to seeing, okay, but why is this a good thing? Or why can I see this as an opportunity to learn? Mm. And gosh, Holly, I can't even tell you how important that is, because I'm a much better person to be around. It makes me more successful. It makes me more resilient. And it's as simple as saying, show me how good it gets every morning.
I can't quite believe I'm saying this after 20 years of dreaming of creating a business show based in kindness. It's come true. My new TV series, Be Your Own Boss, is now on ITV and ITVX. One of my greatest honours has been shining a light on small businesses across the UK. It's truly been my life's work. And now, on a national stage, I get to show what it really means to be a small business founder. In each episode, I'll receive a package from two businesses in need of support, then head out to meet these incredible creative founders, each facing their own challenges, to offer hands-on advice, encouragement, and a little bit of belief to help them grow. It's a show full of kindness, creativity, and courage. Perfect if you've ever dreamed of starting your own business or just love seeing people chase their passions. Tune in to Be Your Own Boss every Sunday on ITV or catch up anytime with a cuppa on ITVX. And can I make an extra ask? Please, can you share it with friends and family and your followers to spread the word and support UK businesses across the country? For now, though, let's get back to our conversation of inspiration. Let's just think that my husband is listening. So you would say to counteract negativity or self-doubt or worry that creeps in, it is a daily ritual. It is something such as taking that first moment in the day to change the mindset. Do you think that anyone can do it? However old, young, set in your ways, leopard doesn't change its spots, all the whole thing. Do you think that we can all do it?
1,000%. And I've seen 80-year-olds do it. I've seen 8-year-olds do it. And it's one of the most rewarding journeys because our brains are really fascinating in the sense that we have between 40,000 and 60,000 thoughts a day, which is a lot. And some of them are like, oh, cool, what am I going to have for breakfast? But some of them are like, oh, I don't feel very good enough, or I feel like a bit of an imposter, I don't deserve this success, or gosh, we're so harsh to ourselves, right? And like, let's say we make a mistake, it's like, oh, you're so stupid, or I'm such a mess right now. And the thing is, negative thoughts in themselves aren't actually that harmful. It's the repeated ones that are harmful. Because the more you say a certain thing or belief or image, that is what rewires your identity and your personality and essentially your lens of the world. And I have seen time and time again where things like worry, fear, doubt, all of it, often it's like the misuse of your imagination and where you're directing your brain. And so the great thing is, a lot of us have the skill already, especially in visualization. So whenever I'm in a room and I say to everyone, okay, hands up if you mentally rehearse worst case scenarios, things going wrong, things failing. Honestly, everyone puts their hand up all the time, even the top athletes in the world. And my point to them is, I think that's great because you're already doing the skill. You're doing the hard part, which is the visualization. The thing is, you're visualizing the wrong thing. Because that's what's wiring your brain to feel more anxious and to be like, oh my gosh, where's the danger? So if you started now mentally rehearsing, okay, things may be going a bit better, or you acting more confident, or maybe you achieving your goals, you're going to also start to change the beliefs you have. And the other thing to mention is, some people come to me and they're like, Maya, I just want to get rid of my negative thoughts. Or like, I don't want to have any self-doubt. And I'm like, great, well, but I'm not the person for that because that is impossible. It's impossible. It's okay if you have negative thoughts and it's okay if you have doubts. The thing is, are you going to choose to believe them and let them dictate how you move forward? That is where the power lies. The thoughts will come. The fears will come. The doubts will come. It's normal. That's where you have to say, one second, am I actually going to believe this? Or am I going to choose different? And that's where the responsibility comes in, the ability to respond.
I'm going to come back to your story, but I want to ask a question that came up today. I was doing an interview and someone said, so Holly, talk to me about, you know, the imposter syndrome. Now, being an advocate for women forever, I said, well, I'm not talking about imposter syndrome. I'm not going to, last year, on International Women's Day, I said, this is the last panel I'm going to be doing on imposter syndrome. Because why is it every International Women's Day am I asked to talk about imposter syndrome? And I said, because quite frankly, why do we keep talking about these things that are terrible, that are holding us back? What about the fact that if you invest in a female business, you're more likely to have far higher returns than men? What if we talk about the female pound and how when a woman buys with her pound, she is something like 60, 70% more likely to support a business that actually does good? Why don't we talk about the power she, you know, yields in society? But no, we're going to talk about imposter syndrome. So you're telling me here, which I sort of know, but tell people that are listening, because I feel, I said today, the imposter syndrome conversation for me is like a duvet You know, you think that you're going to wrap yourself up in it and then somehow it will protect you. By saying that I have the imposter syndrome, this duvet isn't a good duvet that you're wrapping yourself up in. I'd like to hand over to you what you think about that, because just on the basis of what you just said, women in business talking about imposter syndrome continuously, what are we doing to our mind?
To be honest, I think the conversation is a little bit wrong. I think I don't see why people think it's such a bad thing. Like, okay, let me put it this way. What is the primary function of the brain?
To protect yourself.
Exactly. So when we are in situations that feel unfamiliar, or maybe they're new, or maybe, you know, we're pushing our comfort zone a little bit, your brain will be like, hey, Holly, I don't think you should be here. Let's just run away, quick. It doesn't know if you're literally standing up for yourself in a meeting or if a tiger is chasing you. So your brain is doing its job by just saying, hey, I don't think we should be here. You don't deserve to be here. It will give you every possible reason to tell you, get out of the situation. Now, the problem is a lot of us believe our brain and we believe our thoughts. And that's when we're like, oh my gosh, you're right. I shouldn't be here. Or I'm not good enough to be here. Or, well, why have they chosen me? And I think when you realize that this label of saying, okay, you know, I have imposter syndrome, we get so stuck now thinking that, okay, cool. Like you said, as soon as we have a label, it feels kind of productive. It's like, great, I can justify why I have it. But this is where the difference between just saying something and then actually doing something changes. Because with imposter syndrome, you can absolutely have a conversation with it. If it says to you, oh, hey, look, I shouldn't be here. And you're like, you know what? Totally understand that you're scared, but I'm really excited to try. It will slowly, slowly but surely calm down. Like, I don't resonate with imposter syndrome anymore because I've taught my brain enough times that, like, I know you're a bit scared and I get it, it's okay, but, like, I trust myself here. And so I really understand why you kind of mentioned that the more we talk about it, the more we get stuck in it. And the more then people think like, oh my gosh, I have this, even though they might just be feeling a little bit anxious or fearful, which again is so human. And I think this is why I struggle with like the labels and stuff like that, because we now know if someone has anxiety or imposter syndrome before we even know their name. And I don't think that's healthy. So I think it comes back down to, even if it's something you are battling with, because I don't belittle it, I don't dismiss it. I do think it's, you know, people can go through those things. Just ask yourself, what is the one little bit of action that I'm going to take so that it does not have to define me anymore? Because all these things don't need to be fixed. They're just patterns and they're just beliefs. And we, again, have that responsibility now to change it.
You see, and I wish we were talking like this in some of the panels that I've been in, whereas slightly what can happen, it can become an echo chamber of seeing people that you admire admitting that they have imposter syndrome and how that has held them back or something like this, which then I feel in the audience is sitting there saying, okay, well, that's okay if I'm being held back by this. Surely I am being held back by this. This is the, not the excuse in a horrible way, but this is the padding. That's what this duvet, I always think of this duvet. It's this padding that I've got. And my thing, as much as what you're saying, but obviously you're saying it in a very eloquent, incredibly clever way, is just basically we've got to maybe talk about the positive things. And you have now explained, because that is exactly what you need to do, because that's how we're going to rewire the brain. But coming back to your story, despite your battles with your health, you did go to University of Bristol to study geography with innovation, and you use visualization to help you get to that point. What was that like, that bit? Did visualization get you out of the bed and it got you to university?
Yeah, absolutely. I was doing a few types of visualizations at the time. So one, and this is the most basic one, was I had to show my brain and body that it was possible for me to go to university, because I'd been told by so many people, you can't go, you'll never be able to go. So I had to create this imagery where I saw myself in Bristol, and particularly I saw myself in the badminton kit for Bristol University. So I like looked it up. I saw what color it was this maroon and white. And I literally imagined myself like being able to play again. And I mean, it sounds so lame, but I saw myself in lectures, like enjoying it, because I love to study. And it gave me hope. It gave me belief that, hey, Maya, you can do this. And it's the same as like if you take an athlete, if they imagine themselves, let's say, achieving a goal or winning, it again builds that belief. Because the key thing about visualization and why it works is the brain really struggles to know the difference between what's real and what's imagined. And that is the crux of everything. And because you're imagining things all the time, then whatever you are creating here, you're also creating elsewhere. So that was one of the visualizations. The second one, and I briefly mentioned this, is I drew out my colon. So it's like a, you know, I colored it in pink, etc. And then for about half an hour every day, I'd close my eyes and I would imagine, this is going to sound odd, but it was very creative. I imagined this Hoover coming into my colon, hoovering up all the bad cells and like fighting off all these piranhas that were like the pain in my body. And actually, when you look at some of the studies in medicine, this is a really great tool for stroke victims, cancer patients, where let's say they imagine their cancer cells and then they see like soldiers in their body, like fighting them off. It really helps to show the mind and body that, hey, we are getting better, we are healing. So I did that a lot. But then I also was using things like process visualization, where I was seeing myself walking and I was really practicing that performance side of it. I'd also imagine myself, let's say, on trains or in cars, but feeling a bit more stronger because I used to get so anxious there. And so again, I was rewiring all these experiences, which meant that day by day, I was feeling a bit braver, a bit bolder. And it wasn't all plain sailing, you know, I still had setbacks. But the best thing was I had this vision of where I wanted to be and who I wanted to be and how I was going to feel. And I never let anything stand in the way. Sometimes I would even get my blood results back, right? And it would just say like inflammation. And I used to like see it there. I used to close my eyes and I used to imagine, okay, there's going to be a day where I get that sheet again and it's like all green, all green, all green. Mm. You know, some people may think, oh yeah, maybe you were just lucky. It's wishful thinking. But when you're in a position like that, your brain can literally be a weapon and it can really harm you, or it's going to be the thing that helps you through it, because you have to exercise a type of strength that no one is born with. You have to earn it. You have to build it. You mm-hmm. have to mm-hmm. be in that arena and be so willing to fight, but also surrender at the same time. Like I was seeing all this and fighting for it, but then all my results were different. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I had to trust that with time, you know, my body was going to help me. My mind was going to help me. And I was just going to give it my everything.
This is scientifically proven. This is an ancient practice. Just give me the, what you say to the naysayers.
Firstly, I fully welcome them because, like I said, I think mental fitness is where maybe physical fitness was in the 60s, 70s. Mm-hmm. So we are a little bit behind. The reason visualization is so great is because the mind essentially is created and has all these different roads in it. And these roads represent pathways, which essentially is every time you think, feel, and perform, you drive on these pathways. In the last like 10, 20 years, neuroscience has really shown that, hey, wait, we can rewire these because of neuroplasticity. And this is the idea that your brain is malleable. It can change with repetition. So what visualization is doing is, because the brain really doesn't know if something is real or imagined, then if you are imagining you, let's say, walking or running or maybe performing better than you do, with repetition, you are training your brain now to think, feel, and perform like that. And that is why elite athletes use visualization. Mm-hmm. Now, in my research, and I guess for the last 8.5 years, you know, I thought visualization was a bit like manifestation where you're just seeing an outcome, but there are actually 5 techniques. And when you know those 5 techniques, you realize, oh, actually, what we're doing is it's like the weightlifting for the brain. We are making it stronger. We are breaking down old roads and building new ones, better ones. And this is really because the more you fire certain images and thought patterns and beliefs, you then wire them into new beliefs and new ways of thinking. And that's amazing. Like that is amazing. And it all comes down to the fact that your brain really doesn't know. And in fact, try this. If you're like listening to this, try this 30 second exercise. It's quite fun. So if you just want to close your eyes, and I want you to imagine that you are in your kitchen and just see yourself in that environment. So the color of the cupboards, to see the objects. And now you go to your fridge and you open the fridge and there's this like waft of cold air when you open it. And on the shelf, there's half a lemon. And I just want you to hold it in your hand now. It's got like a tough yellow skin. You can just feel the weight of the lemon in your hand. Now it looks very, very juicy. There's a few pips there, but it's like very juicy. And I just want you to start smelling it now. Smell the fragrance of that lemon. You can smell the citrusiness already. Okay, now take this lemon and I want you to start squeezing the juice drop by drop into your mouth. I want you to really taste it. It is so tangy, it's cold, it's sour. Every time it lands on your tongue, it's like maybe your cheeks tingle a little bit, your saliva is increasing. Keep squeezing that lemon. Maybe a pip comes in now. Really taste it. Squeeze all that juice out of it. Okay, and gently open the eyes for me. Okay, now, did you maybe notice that your cheeks went a bit tingly? Maybe your saliva increased? What happened?
Well, look, my entire mouth is like, I feel like I've sucked a lemon.
Yeah.
I literally can't even, how funny is that? I'm literally like, la, la, la.
Yeah.
Horrible.
I know.
Oh.
But you're obviously not holding a lemon, right? Or eating it.
No. But even now, right now when I'm trying to talk to you, my whole mouth has gone really tight.
Yeah.
And my jaw has gone tight.
Yeah. So you can see in just those 30 seconds, the brain literally has no idea if you are physically eating this lemon or if you're just imagining it. And so now apply this to a different situation. Let's say you are, I don't know, about to start a business and your brain is constantly showing you images of you failing, people judging you, maybe it not going very well, or maybe you're about to do something public speaking on stage and you just imagine you going blank or the audience laughing. You are literally telling your brain, hey, let's do this. And whatever you repeat, you are getting very good at. And so that's why we have to be intentional with, no, let me visualize me doing well on stage or me actually building that business.
Mm.
And so you can see at all times, your brain is receiving what you are imagining.
Are you a small business owner? If you are, have you been onto Royal Mail's Small Business Hub? It is full of insight, articles and tips designed with you in mind. Whether you have a new creative business idea and are starting to bring it to life, are looking to grow, or perhaps you are more established and wanting to know your next step, there is information on the Small Business Hub tailored for you. And you might even see me on there sharing some top tips too. Why not take a look? Go to royalmail.com/smallbusinesshub. For now, though, let's get back to our conversation of inspiration. How did this book come about? Because it's called the best book you'll ever read on visualization. It aims to help us all think, feel, and perform like the top 1%. What do you mean by the top 1%?
So I think you have to define this for yourself, because the book really draws upon basically all the research, all the people, all the experiments that have been done about visualization for the last few decades. Sometimes even it goes back to Stoicism. So, you know, years and years ago. Because what I found was the main people that were using visualization and were seeing results were elite athletes. People like Ronaldo, Serena Williams, Muhammad Ali, Tiger Woods. And I was like, wait a second, well, why does no one else know how they did that? And it's because a lot of the techniques have stayed in these elite circles for so many years that no one else has been able to learn them. So the reason I say think, feel, perform like the top 1% is because the tools we are learning in that book are what the best of the best use, but now we're applying it to our life. And one of my favorite things about this book is that when I was learning visualization, I had to look at like one chapter in a book from like 1800s to then, you know, another chapter in a book that came out like in 2012. It was just so messy everywhere. There was nothing where I had one place where I could be like, okay, if I want to learn and master this skill for my mental fitness, where should I go? And it felt like a bit of a contribution that I wanted to share this incredible technique, but in ways that no one has really heard before or seen before. So whether you already do visualization, this will definitely take it further. But whether you're new to it, it's a really nice way to start as well. And obviously the book actually includes over 15 guided visualizations in it. So I actually take you through how to do them, and whether you're listening to them on an audiobook or you're reading them, because I wanted people to do it, not just read about it. Otherwise, you know, we're stuck in the same thing of like, yeah, I know it's important, but actually do it.
So, by the way, I'm still tasting lemon, just so, not tasting it, but my lips feel as if I've just sucked a lemon. So thanks. Does this wear off? You know, tonight I'm going to be like, Maya, I'm still sucking this bloody lemon. My God. Now, listen, this book is, I said to you, I'm on the first, coming into the second chapter.
Yeah.
I am someone who does visualize. Mm. And I'm really, really excited about this. I would say I try and think about, and I'm really excited because I'm a novice, because I have never even, I didn't even know I was visualizing, if I'm honest with you. Mm. I know slightly where I'm going to be in 2026, 2027. I can see something that I'm designing for 2027. I can walk in it. I can feel it. I can touch it. All those sorts of things. So I'm a very basic visualizer, but I would say that is something that has powered my businesses. It has made me not scared because, you know, some of the things I'm going to tackle are pretty big, and friends will say, you know, doesn't it worry you? It doesn't even touch the, like, I don't even feel worried, scared or anything. I feel it's real. That's more what the thing is. And then I can't cope with the fact I've actually got to go and do the work because it's already real in my mind. And so I'm really excited about knowing that I'm on basic level here and that I've been able to achieve what I have on basic level. And you're going to take me to these new stages. But I want to understand how the Nike first ever mental fitness trainer, I mean, congratulations, by the way. And in Nike's entire history, this role has never existed before. And 3 years ago, you pitched it to them and it was rejected. So tell me about the journey from then to now. And I'm assuming you use visualization.
Yeah. So growing up, I hated losing. Like if I got rejected or, you know, anything like that. I remember at school, I wasn't a prefect. And I'm not kidding. Like, Holly, I held that for so long in my life because I was like, oh, it's not worthy. Like, you know, all this stuff. I could not handle losing, especially as a badminton player. I used to like cry on court. It was awful. In a similar way, I trained my brain to actually embrace failure. And there's this idea of being, it's like from a Marvel film where every time this guy got shot, it made him stronger. And I was like, oh my gosh. And it's called anti-fragility. So it's not to say that you can't be vulnerable or fragile, but what we're saying is that let those setbacks and those hard moments, let it make you stronger. And so it was really preparing me because with Nike, I, you know, similar to you, I love thinking quite far ahead. And whenever I visualized the future of mental fitness, I just always saw the swoosh. I was like, okay, that's weird. And I was like, okay, like let me have some fun with this. And I like to think quite boldly. So it was actually a bit of a lazy thing because I don't think I can build the Nike of mental fitness on my own. So I was like, well, who should I partner with other than literally Nike themselves? So on LinkedIn, I found like over 50 contacts and I basically just messaged them all very cold, some DM, some email. Didn't really get any response. I got a few and it was like, oh, okay, I'll pass it on to this person. But you know, it always gets a bit lost in the way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I even tried to like just cold call. I did all of it. And then I remember every time I was in Oxford Circus, because I was still visualizing this goal, it wasn't necessarily a trainer just yet. I just wanted to get involved. Every time I went to Oxford Circus, I saw the store. And because it was giving me power in the present, I'd walk in and I'd be like, hey, can I speak to your manager? And everyone's like, oh my gosh, what's happened? So they'd come and I'd be like, look, I have this idea, X, Y, Z. I'd be like, look, you guys are falling behind because you're not thinking about this side of the fitness industry.
Sorry, is this the manager of Oxford Street store that you're telling this
literally.
To? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Someone's like, Steve, there's this lady downstairs. She wants to talk to you about this thing called mental fitness. Is she mental? Yeah. No. She wants it. Yeah, go on.
It was like
that. This is making me laugh.
But it went even worse because I did it six times. Because every time they were like, oh yeah, we'll think about it. And I was like, but will they, Maya? And then the sixth time I was like, you are not going to leave until you get a yes. And so I just sat there. I sat there until like everyone kind of left the store and I was the last one there. And I was like, so. And I basically showed them the vision I had for an event at Oxford Circus. I was like, look, really simple. There's no cost to you guys. I will do everything. Let's just bring a bunch of people, bring community, etc. And one of the girls there, she was like, okay, look, right now I will give you the person's number who does like the agency stuff for Nike. And maybe like, you know, if you're on the radar, that's fine. Then like a few months later, this guy did call me to be like, okay, we heard you do something about mindfulness. And I was like, oh, no, but fine. we have this event coming up and we want to do mindfulness with dance. And I was like, yeah, but I don't do mindfulness. But then I was like, Maya, do it, but do your thing. So I was like, yeah, absolutely, I do mindfulness. So it was there in King's Cross HQ. And we got there and I like did my whole mental fitness thing. And all the Nike team were like, sorry, why have we never done this before? And I was like, thank you. And this was like 2 years later, right? And then it became this thing where now I had a bit of a foot in. I was like, okay, let me just slowly but steadily really prove my point. Because I'm not one to say that, you know, they should have hired me. No, it's that I have to prove as well why this is important. And then I guess like a few months forward, I then did like a formal pitch to their marketing team to be like, hey, you guys have so many running trainers and so many physical fitness trainers. What about any mental fitness trainers? And they were like, we've never heard of it. And I was like, I explained it. And they were like, interesting. And I think because again, my vision was so clear and I have this philosophy in life that you've got to live your life like a predator, not like prey.
Mm.
And prey means that you're just always seeing the danger and you're letting these setbacks just make you weaker. But to me, a predator is like, Maya, go for your goals. It doesn't matter if you don't catch it. Just go for it. Give everything you've got. And yeah, and then I officially became their trainer a year ago. And it was so funny because my manager at the time there was like, sorry, so do you do like Sudokus? And I was like, no. So it's been a massive education thing, literally. But
Do you do crosswords with people?
Exactly.
Is that how you train the brain?
That's exactly it. But do you know what's amazing, Holly, is last week, Nike unveiled their first ever shoe called Nike Mind. And it is simply a shoe to help the brain. And now they're all like to me, Maya, what do we do? Like, and it's amazing because the innovation was in, you know, in the lab for over 10 years. And so you really are seeing this shift culturally, but there just are not enough people to know how to do it. And at the same time, I was training some of the best tennis players and footballers in the world with their mental fitness.
Say.
And so they couldn't say no. I built enough of a, I guess, yeah, I liked making it so hard for them to say no. And now I just, you know, it's a great team to be part of and I'm excited for where it's going to go as well.
And so for those who are not realizing, so the work you now do with Nike is working with top athletes and working with the best of the best who need to thrive under pressure and yet still need to balance their performance and their well-being. And we do mean well-being, but not in the way that that manager meant well-being. That's not what you were talking about. So that moment, the Oxford Street store, where they were just saying this young woman, she just won't leave. Like, we're trying to turn off the lights and she's not actually leaving. To now being here, are you slightly, yeah, of course. Like, in not an arrogant way, because also, by the way, what do you think about this sort of potential where you say, I'm a predator, not prey? And maybe you might say to me, yeah, well, Holly, I really did see myself here. Like, this is correct. This is how this goes, because I have been visualizing this. And would anyone say, is that arrogance? Is that ego? Is that, do you know what I mean? Because you've got to remember quite a few people, and I'm talking for you out there, who's like slightly not wanting to put their head above to be shot down. And is this a bit bold? Is this a bit all about me? You know, you can hear it. And do you hear this from people?
I literally love the questions you're asking here and challenging with. I think the thing about visualizing the goal is that, like, you're never going to know if it happens. I didn't know. Like, when I was initially visualizing Nike, it was never to be a Nike trainer. Like, that was not there.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I didn't achieve the goal, one thing I will say is I would have been so proud of the person I had become anyway on the way, because it made me be a bit more bold and it made me take chances that really in life, if we always play small, we will get small results. And that is okay. Not everyone has to do stuff like this. I think for me, boldness is a value for me. And in fact, you know what? I'll tell you, when I went to LA this year and I took a very similar approach to a situation there, and it backfired so much to the point that, like, it was not good. And it was funny because...
What, you being bold and a predator creeping up on your...
I did the similar thing. I went straight into the shop, into the offices. I was like, come on.
Yeah. I know how this goes, by the way. I win at the end of this, by the way.
Yeah. And it really backfired. And do you know what's funny? I then started associating bold with, oh, actually, Maya, you need to chill out. That's a bit embarrassing. And it was only this week that I was like, wait a second. I'm noticing that I've basically shrinked who I am because of that one experience, because it was quite emotionally charged.
Mm.
But everything I have got in my life, even choosing to get better, was a bold decision because I had to come off medication on my own. I had to take these risks. And I'm not saying we should all take risks, but I think I can pretty much guarantee that most of us are living life a bit more like prey than predator, because we are worried about what people are going to say. They're going to judge me. Yeah. Oh, it's embarrassing to do this.
It feels safer.
Yeah. Oh gosh, it's so much easier, right? And I think being a predator is in the little things. It's like, have that honest conversation with the person.
Yeah.
Don't try and pretend that you're not feeling a certain way.
Yeah.
Send that email, post that video, tell them what you want. And it won't always give you the results you want, but since I've really aligned to that value, it's so fun, and it definitely gets me in rooms and positions that I think if I didn't do it, I wouldn't be in. So there's obviously a balance.
And builds you, the Maya that you are today on this podcast, you know, for all the goals that you might set and visualize and all those sorts of things. I think you've said this a number of times during the podcast. The secondary effect of this has just changed your life and who you are. And it's all for the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
The practice has basically cellularly changed you.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I'd say is, you know what? I think to experience visualization in a different way, move it away from goals and instead think about your character as a goal. So obviously, I know people can't see this, but like, this is like the background of my phone. You can see this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, this is a character I built. She's like my 2.0, and her name is Meta. Now, Meta, she's half beast, half monk. Because when I came into entrepreneurship, all I could see was like, you have to hustle. You have to do those, you know, 20-hour days. And that's the only way you can get far. But I had just been someone who was very ill because of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I built her to remind myself that, Maya, do it in your own way. Yes, be on those stages and be bold and fiery, but you have that softness. You want to spend time on your own by the lake, you do it. You don't need to feel guilty about that. And Meta is someone, she has incredible boundaries. She has incredible self-confidence. And every morning I would visualize her. I would see how she'd walk into a room, how she would talk, how she would implement those boundaries. And today, I'm not just visualizing her, I've fully embodied her. Like, I am her. And so she now needs to evolve. And I think, again, we forget that, like, we are the only animal in the world that can wake up and choose, hey, I want to try this today. I want to be a bit different today. I want to improve my character today.
Mm.
So let's actually start experimenting with that and see where that potential could go. And I don't think that's ego. I think it's just really great belief. And it doesn't mean that you don't still be kind and grateful, because I always believe that success without gratitude is failure. There is no point achieving anything in life if you are not going to take moments to be like, hey, I am so grateful for this opportunity. I'm so grateful for my mind, for my body, for my family, for my friends. That is the ultimate success.
I love that. Two things while you were talking I was visualising. I was visualising Sasha Fierce.
Love
which
it.
I'm obviously assuming this is why Beyoncé has this alter ego where she puts herself into that person, what that person believes, and how lucky we are that I'm not an elephant.
Yeah, it's true.
And how, you know, that all I would do is wake up in the day, think about my long trunk. I'd probably think it's too long. Drinking water, looking after my young. And this is where you're a trained mental athlete. And I am thinking about elephants and Sasha Fierce, right? So this is the difference, my love.
Well, honestly, the whole personality of my company and brand is that your mind is like a puppy. And if you don't train it, it's going to shit everywhere.
There we are.
So I'm all for the animal analogies. And I think it is true, you know, like choose.
And I think that's the thing. I think that's where the elephant comes from. The elephant does not have a choice. We're the only people with the choice to have an adventure every day. And that it's how we wake up. And I'm going to, God, tomorrow morning, watch out world. Do you know what I mean? My husband's, oh, here we go. Oh, she's off on one. And I'm like, no. Hang on a minute. Sit down with your boiled egg.
Let's visualize together.
Yeah. You're not an elephant. This is the first thing I want to say to you. What? What are you talking about?
I love this. Can I come round? I want to hear that conversation.
Oh my. Actually, you are coming round.
Talking about elephants, do you know one of the most impactful stories of my whole life is actually about an elephant? And it's this idea that there's a baby elephant in the circus. And obviously when they're babies, they've got to get chained because, you know, they've got to basically be kept. Naturally, the baby elephant's just not strong enough to pass those chains. And this dad and son come into this circus like years later. And the baby is, the son is like, well, why is that elephant not coming out the chains? Because he's now like fully grown. And the circus person there was like, see, when the elephant was small, he actually didn't have the strength to break them. Now that the elephant's big, he still believes he doesn't have the strength. He hasn't even tried because he thinks that, oh, because I didn't have the strength then, I don't have it now. So he just stays stuck. And it's the same with our own limitations. Like a lot of the limitations we have are created here and it's not actually the case. And so we've got to learn, how do we start doubting a lot of your limitations rather than doubting our potential? And so just think back, be the elephant sometimes and be like, you know what? Gosh, I can come out of the chains.
I never thought that my use of the elephant analogy here would have such a profound ending, Maya, to this podcast. I mean, look at that. We're a double act. I'm like Dumbo, you know, it's in the circus, and you're giving us this beautiful story as the trained athlete that you are. Listen, we are coming to the end of this show. I wanted to ask you, I use the analogy that this is a roller coaster. You're 27 years young, but with a very, very, very wise mind on you. If you had to pinpoint a moment that you would say was one of your lowest low points on that roller coaster, what would you say it was?
I think it was the moment I genuinely lost hope. Now, I lost that after I lost my fight, because I think when you lose your fight, you kind of surrender to it. But when you lose hope, I think hope is one of the biggest blessings we have as humans, because no matter how dire your situation is, if you can find a spark of hope, that's all you need. But there was just this time, and this is maybe a bit too much information, it was this time where I was in hospital and I'd gone to the toilet and I had no energy to walk back to my bed, and I was like, oh my God, like this is going to be the rest of my life. And every little bit of my light in my heart, in my soul just went, it just like switched off. And it was scary. It was such a dark place being like, oh my gosh, there is no way out. There is no way out. That was really, really low. Really low.
You poor, poor thing. I'm so sorry you had to go through that. Although who you are today was born through that experience. Tell me conversely your greatest high.
Honestly, like this moment, I every day, like even now, it's just like during this podcast, even the amount of gratitude I feel to the fact that I get to speak to you and that I can sit here not in pain, not thinking, oh my God, I need to run to the loo. Like that is like, it gives me goosebumps to think that I get to live another day every day. And it's just like, yeah, it's the best feeling in the world. And I hope I never lose that, because that is a choice as well. It's that childlike curiosity and, you know, just you find the magic and the extraordinary in just the tiniest of moments. And I again think that's a skill. It's not anything like I was born with. No, it's just a skill. You choose to do that. So literally this moment as I speak to you is something I'm happiest for, I know.
What a lovely response. I feel quite emotional. I feel like you're going to have the richest life, my love. You're going to have the richest life because you at 27 are seeing the world through those eyes. And it normally it takes until you get to about my stage where you start learning that you're on the other side and that you better start being grateful. And here you are on the other side with this mindset. You know, what an amazing thing. We're at that time of the podcast where I'm going to ask you to read a letter to your younger self. I don't know what you're going to say. I hope it involves elephants. But I'm going to hand over to you.
So I actually decided to say it from where I am right now.
Yeah.
Because as I reflect, even this year, and I guess what I wanted to say is like, well, to Maya, and this is like 15-year-old self. So this year has genuinely been one of the loneliest years for me, because I've lost quite a few friends, not, you know, just because things happen in your 20s and whatever, but it's also been the most honest years of my life, because I've really found who I want to be and what feels really aligned. And if I think back to when you were young and you were so desperate to be loved and seen and fit in and just you wanted the world to kind of like validate you, it's the coolest feeling ever to genuinely know that you've grown up to now learn how to validate yourself without other people's opinions or need for that. And the other thing I want to say to her is that in life, it's so easy to blame yourself for what happened and every little choice, whether it was listening to that doctor or making that mistake or choosing that person or that decision. But it's just not your fault. Like, it is not your fault. Like, it really isn't your fault. And no matter how many times you have to remind yourself that, remember that. You did not have anything to do with that. And you can let yourself now fully go and forgive yourself for it. And the last thing I just say is you are bloody, if I'm allowed to swear, fucking amazing.
You can swear.
Yeah, keep learning and growing and yeah, change who you are, but don't change your core. Keep changing and evolving, but at your core, you are the boldest, bravest and most coolest person ever. And so enjoy it.
I think it's just because I just feel so maternal towards you in not a patronizing way, in a way as a young, incredible woman, an entrepreneur in the making with such bold, huge vision, which I do empathize with and to understand. And I just wish you everything. I think people on this podcast are going to listen to this and you've just got a whole heap of people cheering you along now. We're going to be on the sides. You can visualize this. We're going to be on the sides, right? We're going to have pom-poms. We're going to the suit on your Meta. She's wearing a blue suit. We're going to have blue pom-poms and we're going to have them in the air. and we're going to be shouting your name, and we're just going to wish you everything.
Oh.
And we're going to watch you do your thing. And we're going to be really, really proud of you.
Oh.
Because you're the next generation of women coming along that's going to change the world that we live in. And I, for one, I'm very, very honoured to have spoken to you at this point. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you. No, I really appreciate it. And look, I'm super inspired by you. And I think, you know, it's also an honour to speak to you. And all I'll say is, as everyone's doing the pom-poms, don't forget to train the brain as well, you know?
Yes.
It's all one thing to listen to the podcast, but then now the training begins. If you want to become that warrior, that champion, you got to put the reps in. That's when it really starts.
You heard it here, everyone. It's not just about the pom-poms, okay? Bless you, my love. Thank you so much for this podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, can I ask that you share it with a friend and like, subscribe and review it too, so that together we can inspire even more people to follow their dreams, to build a life they love.